This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, let's see here. There is so much news. There is so much going on. We're going to have a fascinating day today. We're going to hear from the incoming president of the National Organization for Black Law Enforcement, and we're going to hear from Congressman Joe Crowley. I'm looking forward to that. He's the chair of the House Democratic Caucus. But in this first hour, there's just a whole bunch of things. First of all, Scaramucci. Is he getting too much PR for Trump? I mean, he tweeted this thing about, oh, my God, my financial information is out there, and I'm going, you know, and rents, and I'm going to turn this over to the FBI. Well, it turns out that it's publicly available. Anybody can get his financial information. And he's in the process right now of trying to sell his hedge fund to a Chinese bank for $90 million. And if there's this cool little loophole in the law where if you sell your company and then go to work in the White House, you don't pay taxes on the money, essentially. So the mooch is trying really hard to do this deal. And frankly, if I owned a hedge fund right now at this point with the stock market, at this point with the economy, you know, we're getting higher and higher and higher on the, you know, closer and closer and closer to the edge of the ledge, I'd be selling it too. But, you know, the question is the mooch getting too much publicity for Trump? You've got Republicans in the Senate saying, this administration is out of control. Well, mooch isn't even part of the administration yet. He can't go to work until he sells his company. That's presumably going to be in the middle of August. But, you know, is he getting too much PR for Trump? Trump, you know, took down Spicer, basically, because he was getting, you know, he was becoming more famous than Trump. Trump doesn't like that. This guy is a, you know, a little-fingered sociopath who does not, a narcissist, who does not like the focus of television attention to be anywhere other than on himself. So, number one. Number two, it looks like the Republicans are going to vote on a skinny repeal of Obamacare today. That repeals the individual mandate or repeals the employer mandate. So your employer just might nuke your health insurance if you think that you've got a health insurance through your employer and therefore you're protected. If you work for a company that has more than 50 employees, good luck. It would repeal the medical device tax. In other words, the lobbyists have been whispering in the ears of the Republicans. It would defund Planned Parenthood, leaving millions of American women with, you know, few or untenable options for gynecological and other, you know, and other health issues. It would repeal the Prevention and Public Health Fund. So we're no longer protected against infectious diseases, whether they're just like naturally occurring things, you know, measles epidemics, or whether they're, hey, somebody brought some anthrax into the United States and spread it all over, fill in the blank. And it would repeal the Community Health Center Fund. This is the fund that, I believe, it's the fund that pays for things like the 10,000 community health centers around the United States that Bernie Sanders got put into Obamacare. That's pretty awful stuff. And they're calling it a skinny repeal, like that's desirable. You ever walk into a bar and order a skinny margarita or a skinny gin and tonic? I would think that they would think that you mean less alcohol, right? Like, not as much. And who wants that? I suppose, you know, some people are teetotalers or close to it, but with regard to healthcare, who wants skinny healthcare? It's not a good thing. I realize in our culture we're supposed to believe that skinny is good, but this, you know, obviously there are exceptions to that. But anyhow, the U.S., the top U.S., so there's that. Then yesterday Trump tweeted out that, you know, he hates transgendered people, basically. And I don't know if he realized or not that somewhere between 10 and 20,000 transgender people are currently serving active duty in the military. You know, but one of them is an acquaintance of mine who's been over 20 years in the Air Force. And this is mind-boggling. So two things to this story, two pieces to this story. The first is the, you know, Trump announced this with three tweets. And the first tweet basically said, I've been talking to my generals and I'm going to do something. And then the second tweet, the what he was going to do, took 9 minutes. And apparently, from several news reports from several different sources over at the Pentagon, the big cheeses were totally freaked out because Trump had not discussed this with them in advance. And they didn't know what was coming in that second tweet. The big fear was that he was going to say, in his first tweet, I've talked to my generals. His second tweet was going to be, and we're nuking North Korea in 5 minutes. They had no idea. Now that they know what it is, Joseph Dunford, the general who is the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, sent out a written letter, a written message on Thursday to all military leaders, all branches of the service, saying, and I quote, there will be no modifications to the current, this would be the current policy around transgender people, there will be no modifications to the current policy until the president's direction has been received by the Secretary of Defense and the secretary has issued implementation guidance. In other words, number one, Trump never told us. Number two, he still hasn't told us the formal way that he's supposed to tell us by notifying us, you know, formally. And number three, we're the ones who decide how and even if this gets put into effect. And then he ends this with a kick in the ass to Trump. He says, in the meantime, we will continue to treat all of our personnel with respect. As importantly, given the current fight and the challenges we face, we will remain focused on accomplishing our assigned missions. There was, in my opinion, in other words, Trump, stop dragging us into your petty and bizarre political fights. Now, meanwhile, the Department of Justice under Jeff Sessions has now come out and said, you know, we're not sure that gay people are protected by civil rights laws. Let that sink in. These guys are committed to rolling us, to taking the United States back to this, you know, make America great again, right? I mean, that was also Ronald Reagan's campaign slogan. Reagan took us halfway back to 1929. Trump is trying to take us the other half of the way. This is nuts. And then Lisa Murkowski was one of the two senators, she and Susan Collins, who voted against Trump's, throw 32 million people off their health care bill. And so this is a report in the Alaska Dispatch News says that Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, this is a report by Alan Rupar over at thinkprogress.org. According to a report in Alaska Dispatch News, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, now we were talking about him yesterday, the guy who rode to work on a horse, who's traveling, you know, the Western lands, with his Western outfit and his boots and the whole bit, you know, the cowboy hat and talking with a drawl and everything. He's suddenly become, you know, a cowboy when his bureaucrats back here in Washington, D.C. are busily working to sell off public lands and give billionaires and oil and mineral developers everything they want, and screw the American public. Anyhow, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke called Murkowski and Dan Sullivan, who is the junior senator from Alaska, and said that Murkowski's vote, quote, this is what Zinke, who's in Trump's cabinet, this is what Zinke said to Dan Sullivan. He said, Murkowski's vote has put Alaska's future with this administration in jeopardy. Really? Sullivan told the Dispatch News that Zinke's Wednesday call was troubling. Sullivan said, I'm not going to go into the details, but I fear that the strong economic growth, pro-energy, pro-mining, pro-jobs and personnel from Alaska who are part of those policies are going to stop. I tried to push back on behalf of all Alaskans. We're facing some difficult times. And there's a lot of enthusiasm for the policies that Secretary Zinke and the president have been talking about with regard to our economy. But the message was pretty clear. This is government by mafia. This illegitimate president, this national vote loser, is acting like a mob boss. Hey, you wouldn't want anything to happen. You know, nice state you got there. Lisa. Wouldn't want anything to happen to it. A lot of nice women and children there in Alaska, Lisa. Wouldn't want anybody to get kneecapped. Right. This is, bizarre is not even a strong enough word for this. It's not even close. Meanwhile, Sam Brownback, the guy who screwed up Kansas, totally screwed up Kansas, right, with Reaganomics. He's so unpopular, he couldn't get elected dog catcher in Kansas. So Trump is making him our religious ambassador to the world. What? The United States has a religious ambassador? This is bizarre, too. But anyhow, it's Anything Goes Summer. Whatever you'd like to talk about, give us a shout. 202-808-9925. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be right back. Along the lines of other news today, this is interesting. This is from Victoria Jones's daily news summary that she sends out to the press. Seven Senate Republicans joined all Democrats yesterday in rejecting a measure by Senator Rand Paul that would have repealed most of Obamacare. With a two-year delay, no replacement. Congress passed nearly identical legislation in 2015, sent it to Obama. He vetoed it, but this time they couldn't even pass it. Seven Republicans in the Senate said no. Rand Paul is crazy. Meanwhile, President Trump in the White House itching. I can't say that. Donald Trump in the White House. He's not my president. I'm sorry. He's not my president. He didn't win the majority of votes in this country, just like George W. Bush didn't in 2000. George W. Bush was an illegitimate president. Donald Trump is an illegitimate president. There's no other way to say it. He's there because some of the half of the founders wanted to preserve slavery, so they created the Electoral College. So, anyhow, this is where it gets really bizarre. Scaramucci, he says, if you've read Team of Rivals, it took Lincoln three or four times to get what he wanted from the Senate and the House of Representatives, which was the full abolition of slavery. That was a much tougher thing to get done than what we're working on right now, but it's too early. Wait a minute. Scaramucci just compared himself and Trump to Abraham Lincoln? There's something very wrong with this. Kurt in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Kurt, what's on your mind today?
Hey, good morning, Tom. You know, I've had a couple weeks here being unemployed, which is okay, because I decided to go back and reread Sinclair Lewis.
Oh, it can't happen here?
Yeah, it can't happen here. Wonderful book. And, you know, I just thought that I'd throw that out there as a suggested reading for your listeners.
Good old Buzz Windrup and what was the other guy's name? The bad guy?
Oh, Wildrip or something like that?
Yeah.
Let's see, I got the book right here.
Yeah. Buzz Windrup.
Brilius Windrip.
Okay. All right.
Brazilius.
So.
It's interesting to read how much this president, right, he beat Franklin Delano Roosevelt for the Democratic in the novel, for the Democratic nomination in 1936, and just turned it into a fascist country.
Mm-hmm.
And if we start to read how he did it, I mean, there's just so much you can see clearly.
Yeah, it's been more than 30 years since I read It Can't Happen Here. How did he start?
I'm sorry, say it again?
I said it's been 30 years since I read the book. I don't remember how he started. What did he...
Well, he started with a really populist appeal, right?
Right.
Because, you know, the country was falling apart. You had millions of people out of work. And so he was saying in the campaign, oh, yeah, I'm supporting you, as long as you do it the way I want you to do it.
Right.
You know, that, just to sum it up, but, yeah, really interesting book, especially when we can see it clearly in our modern time.
Yeah, it truly is, and we are watching it, you know, right in front of us, and it's scary stuff, and Sinclair Lewis wrote that during Roosevelt's first term, didn't he?
Yeah.
Around the time of the attempted of the coup attempt. Very interesting. Kurt, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for listening to KBCS. We'll be right back. It's coming up on, what is it, 20 minutes past the hour, 21 minutes. Back, Tom Hartman here with you. So just, you know, going through some of the stories of the day, it just boggles my mind how much this Sam Brown, this is Mitch Smith and J.C. Fortin in today's New York Times. Sam Brownback, the beleaguered governor of Kansas, whose aggressively conservative fiscal policies turned some fellow Republicans against him. I would say whose aggressively conservative fiscal policies destroyed his state. Will be nominated to serve as ambassador at large for international religious freedom. Mr. Brownback, 60, represented his home state in Congress before being elected to two terms as governor beginning in 2011. Right. This guy couldn't get elected dog catcher, so they threw him a bone. Amazing. That's amazing. Okay, apropos of Trump going after trans people yesterday, in order to satisfy a couple of crazy right-wingers in the U.S. House of Representatives, one of them in particular, I retweeted her gibberish yesterday. You can check it out. They were saying, basically, we're not going to give you funding in this House Appropriations Bill for your much-beloved Mexican wall unless you cut funding. This $2 to $8 million a year in funding for you know, medical support for trans people in the military. Now, keep in mind, this is the same military that spends $80 million a year on erectile enhancement products like Viagra. $80 million a year, between $2 and $8 million a year for trans people. Just to put this in context, I just want to read a poem. This is an old poem. I'm sure most of you will recognize it. It's over on the website of the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust. It's by Pastor Martin Niemöller. He wrote this just after he was taken off to a concentration camp in the 1930s. First, they came for the communists, and I did not speak out because I was not a communist. Then they came for the socialists. And I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. An attack on trans people is an attack on all of us. We are all human beings here in this country. And for Trump to attack trans people just so he could get funding for his wall in a cynical political ploy is pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. And then you've got Trump threatening Murkowski. You got Jeff Sessions saying that gay people are not protected under from discrimination under federal law. Now, keep in mind, trans people and gay people, different things. Trans has to do with gender identity. Gay has to do with sexual preference. They're different things, but, you know, it's different than the, quote, norm. So Donald Trump feels free to go after these people. And then, you know, Scaramucci, oh, this is just pathetic. There's an interesting piece over at BuzzFeed News by Adrian Carasquillo. I'm pronouncing it right, in Washington, D.C. And Adrian, the headline is, Trump actually likes making people's lives living hell, as Sessions is finding out. Trump, famous for firing people on TV, doesn't relish doing so in real life. But that doesn't mean he doesn't have a particular skill set to get them to resign. And Trump, in one of his ghostwritten books, it's called the Apprentice. Oh, I'm sorry, it's not The Apprentice. It's whatever it is. Anyhow, in one of his books, he talks about how difficult it is to fire people. He doesn't like firing people. So what he does is he shames them and humiliates them and berates them, and eventually they quit. There's a whole book, you know, literally, not an art, a book, an entire article about this over at BuzzFlash News that is fascinating. Trump in his book, Way to the Top, is his 2004 book. He says, I don't like firing people. It's not a pleasant thing. Right. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
I wonder if when he was a little kid, Trump delighted in pulling the wings off flies, you know? I mean, like George W. Bush, did he torture little animals? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And just I want to come back to this for just a minute, and then I'll pick up your phone calls here. But the... if you go back to 1787, the Constitutional Convention met in Philadelphia and came up with a Constitution through August, September, October of 1787, through the summer and early fall, and then began the process of trying to sell this thing, which is what the Federalist Papers were all about over the next year and a half. It wasn't ratified until 2 years later, in 1789, which is when we officially became a country, or a new country, a federal republic. We had been a country operating under the Articles of Confederation before that, but arguably we really weren't a country. There were 13 countries with a trade agreement. That was the Articles of Confederation. So anyhow, James Madison had been shepherding the Constitution through, and he's very proud of it, and justifiably so. I mean, he spent years, 5 years, actually, studying constitutions historically, all the way back to ancient Greece, right? Studying constitutions, looking at the Iroquois Confederacy, among other things. So he sends a copy of it to Jefferson. Says, "What do you think?" And Jefferson says, "You know, I like this and this and this, but here's what I don't like." And one of the things that Jefferson suggested, and this led to a conversation. You can read their letters online, I'm sure. Between Jefferson and Madison was the danger of religion. Jefferson wanted it. Not only was there already in the Constitution an explicit ban on religious tests, but he wanted freedom of religion and the press to be attached to the Constitution as a separate Bill of Rights. Madison thought it was unnecessary. In fact, he was worried about a separate Bill of Rights because he thought that might cause people to think these are all the only rights you have. And Jefferson said, no, you've got to say this out loud. No religious test. And then Jefferson goes off on this thing about how the people of America will never be stupid enough to elect somebody who is, you know, a priest, a religious person, a person who puts religion ahead of other things in their lives. And Madison said, well, that doesn't scare me as much as the federal government starting to give money to churches. You know, should we ever start supporting individual churches in this country, we're going to corrupt the churches with our money. So Jefferson was afraid about religious people having political power, Mike Pence, hint, hint, and Madison was afraid about the federal government giving money to churches, which we do every day. You know, George Herbert Walker Bush started this 1,000 points of light thing, and, you know, all this, let's just pass out money to churches, and we're doing that. And now church schools, Betsy DeVos is expanding that. So this country was literally founded on the idea that we don't do religion in the United States. Religion can be done in the United States, but we the people, we the government, we don't do religion. And now Donald Trump is appointing loser Sam Brownback, the guy who destroyed Kansas with his Reaganomics experiment. He's going to appoint him religious ambassador. Our founders and framers are rolling over in their graves, I'll tell you. And frankly, probably many of the people who fought and died for this nation in the 240 years since then. It's incredible. Robin, listening on SiriusXM in Xenia, Ohio. Hey, Robin, what's on your mind there?
Oh, not much. I just wanted to correct you on your use of pronouns back when you said sexual preference. It's actually not a preference. It's an orientation. When you say preference,
thank you.
It implies...
I got it.
When you say preference, it implies that, hey, it's a choice, and it's
right.
Not a choice.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So I just wanted to correct you on that and tell you what a great job you're doing.
Thank you, Robin. I appreciate that. You know, a lot has changed in my lifetime, and sometimes it takes a while for me to keep up with the language. I appreciate that correction. Thank you, Robin. Dave, in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I wanted to get your take on something Scaramucci said about Trump. But, you know, I just want to ask you, because you were really, really good, in my opinion, at connecting the military and corporate interest in foreign affairs. Scaramucci said during, you know, because he was responding to tweets, all right? So it was off topic a little bit, all right? But this is the comment he made. He said at the dinner party that Trump hosted, that Trump talked about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And he said the director of the CIA got it, you know, I'm not sure who he was referring to, maybe Tenet. He said the director of the CIA was a good person, but he got it wrong. Now, is that not creepy? The president of the United States, all these years later, still trying to talk about weapons of mass destruction in a virtually obliterated country with really no economic abilities whatsoever?
Yeah, well, you have to keep in mind, Donald Trump's principal news source is Fox so-called News. And Fox, there are personalities on Fox today who are still promoting the idea that there actually were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and they all just got smuggled over to Syria before we showed up. So, you know, that lie is not going to die easily as long as it's attached to George W. Bush's legacy and thus the legacy of the Republican Party. So I'm guessing that Trump, just like, you know, 4 days ago, Fox and Friends, I believe it was Fox and Friends. It was one of the shows. No, it was Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson did a show on how people, trans people, are also child molesters. And, you know, he had a guest on saying this stuff. And, you know, 4 days later, Trump is like bartering away the lives of trans people in exchange for money for his wall in Mexico. This is the most, in my mind, Dave, the most dangerous part of this Trump presidency is the fact that this president gets his information from a news source that we know from university studies, when people watch Fox News as their exclusive source of news, they are more malinformed, more misinformed, and more uninformed. They know less about important things, and they know a lot of things that aren't true. They believe them to be true. They believe that they know them, than people who watch no news whatsoever. And certainly they're more poorly informed than people who get their news from the corporate media or from NPR or from any other source. Fox is the worst source for information in the United States, demonstrably. And this is where this is where Donald Trump is getting his news. And so, gee, what a surprise. He thinks that, you know, Tenet probably just got it wrong. Tenet didn't get it wrong. Dick Cheney walked those lies over to Tenet and other people in the CIA and said, you will say this. And that's pretty much a matter of public record now. So, you know, Dave, interesting question. Thank you very much. Linwood. Somehow my Linwood call back. I'm sorry. My call screening software here just jumped right over you. Brian in Indianapolis. Hey, Brian, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Brian. Hi, Tom. This is Brian from Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Long-time listener. I started listening to you when I lived in Maryland. Many years ago, proud Hoosier progressive. And I really think a lot of times here in the Midwest, a lot of us progressives were forgotten about. There are a lot of progressives in the Midwest.
Absolutely. I grew up in Michigan, and I still,
Pence land. And yeah, very few people that know about this man and how dangerous he is more than Hoosier progressives like me. We all know he pushed the so-called Religious Freedom Act here in Indiana, which basically destroyed our state's tourism economy, gave Indiana a very bad image of being an intolerant state. And quite frankly, he decided to run with Trump because he was going to lose here in Indiana.
Oh, yeah. He was down like 30% popularity. I mean, it was
absolutely
totally in the crapper.
Totally. But the reason why I'm calling today, Tom, is that I really want Democrats to really start running more aggressive, muscular campaigns. It just seems like, and I'm a young guy, I'm not even in my 50s, but it seems like Democrats in the past were a lot tougher. It was just whether it was Truman or the Kennedys or Johnson, they just ran more muscular campaigns against Republicans. And they put Republicans on their heels. They played hardball. It just seems like Democrats, we just don't run tough campaigns against these Republicans anymore. And I think the way for us to do that is, and I agree with you about single payer, I think we need to run a very patriotic campaign where we say, hey, we're going to take our country back from the Russian influence that our current occupant of the White House is truly under. There's no doubt about it. He's truly under the influence of the Russians. I think if we ran a campaign like that, along with pushing economic populism like single payer, I like our chances in 2018 and definitely taking the White House back in 2020. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, step by step. I mean, if you can demonstrate any specific policies that Trump is promoting as a result of Russian influence, go after them. I don't know of any. Do you?
Well, I mean, look at the fact that he's. Well, let's see what happens with the bill that's been passed by Congress.
The sanctions. But that's not him screwing us on behalf of another country. I'm not saying I'm not saying this is not a thing, and I'm not saying that it's not something we should be very concerned about. We should be very upset about. And there needs to be, and I've been saying this from day one, that there needs to be an independent and nonpartisan commission that looks into what's going on, that looks into Russian interference in our election, that looks into Russian oligarch or government involvement with Donald Trump, all of that. But to the point of Democrats winning elections again, the difference between Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, John Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, the muscular Democrats that you're talking about, and the Democratic Party of today, in my opinion, has nothing to do with Russia. It has to do with the fact that back then, Democrats were united around a set of core values that had to do with the labor movement, that had to do with building a middle class, that had to do with pushing back against oligarchy. You know, FDR famously saying they hate me and I welcome their hatred. Calling them out by name. Harry Truman used to do that. Lyndon Johnson used to do that. Going after these guys. I mean, the way that LBJ went after Barry Goldwater, Goldwater ended up winning, what, two states, something like that? I mean, they were able to do that. And then, you know, the corporate influence came into the Democratic Party in a really big way in the late 80s and early 90s. And it diluted that the ability of the Democratic Party to say, we're here to fight against the corporations and the billionaires on your behalf, because they were then taking money from the corporations and the billionaires. And that's the existential crisis that the Democratic Party faces right now, is in a post-Citizens United world, in this day and age, in this, you know, post-Buckley versus Vallejo 1976, Citizens United 2010, in this world where basically money reigns, you know, money rules, that particularly if you're from a large state, there's no way you can win an election without a lot of cash. In that world, how does the Democratic Party survive without the labor unions? You know, back when Reagan came into office and a third of America was members of a union, the unions had incredible power. They were the major supporters of the Democratic Party and the major funders of the Democratic Party. And that's why Republicans have tried to destroy the post office. It's the largest unionized employer in the United States. It's why they started. The very first thing Ronald Reagan did was his war on labor unions. He went after the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Association. He went after PATCO. And he's been successful. We're now down to 6% in the private sector of employment, you know, of unionization, from 30% or more back in 1980. So that money source for Democrats has been wiped out. And the unions that are left are, you know, frantically just trying to hold on, you know, trying to stay above water. That's been wiped out. So this is the crisis the Democrats are facing. I don't have an easy answer for them. And, you know, other than really going after money and politics.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Brian, thanks for the call. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom, watching Free Speech TV in Somerville, Mass. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today? Tom? Okay, Tom, I'm going to put you on hold. And Tom is on line 7, Nate, if you want to catch him and find out what's going on. Michael in Imperial Beach, California. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Mr. Hartman. Okay, on the road, so this is not a written question. But about this new dude, Anthony Scaramucci,
right,
who was a hedge fund real estate, I mean, hedge funds person, made his money through Wall Street. Now he's in control. I mean, Sean Spicer, he gone. We got Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and we got him. How do you explain how the, and again, prior to this, two or three, 4 years ago, he ranked out Donald Trump and dissed him a big one. Mm. And now he's his best buddy. I don't understand these people.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's everybody, all the billionaires in New York, maybe not all of them, but the circles that Donald Trump and Scaramucci, Scaramucci's not a billionaire. He's only worth, you know, what, $80 million, something like that. But what these rich people understand is that it can be expensive to have values. Instead, what you have are allegiances and alliances. It's not what you know, it's who you know. It's not what you believe, it's who you know who can make something happen. And their principal allegiance is to power and wealth, or maybe I should reverse that, to wealth and the power that it can buy. And so as a consequence of that, Scaramucci, you know, took the skin off Donald Trump a couple of years ago on CNBC. But that said, he can go back to Trump and say, hey, you know, that was just me then. You know, I was just trying to make some money. I was just trying to be liked, you know, just like you. I mean, you know, Donald Trump, you used to support abortion. You say, you know, you even asked Marla Maples if she wanted to have an abortion. You used to support gay rights. You used to talk about climate change, you know, and now you don't. So you've changed. I could change too. You know, it doesn't matter. There's beliefs are not important. What's important is supporting each other, is being together, is fighting a fight. I can just imagine that conversation between Mooch and Trump, and Trump going, yeah, absolutely, yep, just like that Sessions. He's like loyal to this idea of the institution of the FBI and the Justice Department, and he really should be loyal to me. You know, what's this loyalty to the American people stuff? And Lisa Murkowski, she's worried about people in Alaska not having health care. Screw her. I want a victory. You know, this is about me. This is the kind of stuff that Trump says, and this is the kind of thinking that you see on display in the White House. And it's clear, you know, it's clear to me that Mooch is as much of a narcissistic sociopath as Trump is. Maybe not quite as much, but close. And so it's, you know, it's a band of brothers rather than a team of rivals. What do you think,
okay,
Michael?
Can I ask you one last question?
Real quick.
Very quick, right. I asked this to Stephanie Miller. Now, about Jefferson Beauregard Sessions.
The third.
Who hired, if he's the supreme leader of lawyers in the United States, who hires a lawyer who cannot even remember stuff?
Well, I don't remember is the strongest defense against a perjury prosecution that there is. And in my opinion, that's why it's why Reagan said it over 160 times when he was deposed in Iran-Contra. And it's why, you know, Jeff Sessions kept saying, I don't remember when he was testifying before Congress, in my opinion. So, yeah. And every lawyer in the country knows that. Michael, thank you for your call. Welcome back. Tom in Somerville, Mass. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today? Thomas is not working. You got to listen to your telephone, not your radio. Vinish in Canoga Park, California. Hey, Vinish, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks, Tom. So, a huge fan of your and your commentary on the social progressive issues and fight against the blatant corruption of the capitalism. So, my point is so one of the callers just called in and wanted to talk about the muscularness of the Democratic. I want to argue that point a little bit. In what I think, Tom, that right now the Democratic Party is going through a transition. These are changing times. We have given chance to a black man to become a president. We have given a chance to a woman to become a president. It can happen in 2020. We can give a chance to a gay man to become a president, right? And so not only a white man can come in and have a muscular campaign to do it, and we are fighting the misogyny. We are fighting the racism that only a certain section of the people can become the president and can become the top leader. So I think what we are doing, what the Democratic Party is doing, they have to continue doing that. They have to continue pushing the pamphlet. They have to show a mirror to the society that anybody, if you are capable, you can come in and become a president. You are capable, you can come and join the army. You can serve the army. And we have to continue doing that, taking the so-called masculine factor out of the campaign.
Sure.
That's what I believe.
Vinish, I think that's a very, very good point. And, you know, we need to acknowledge all the successes that the Democratic Party has had Over the last couple of decades. And we also need to acknowledge that there's a bunch of right-wing petrobillionaires who have funded an organization that's larger and more well-financed and well-staffed than the Republican Party itself. And those organizations that the Koch Network has funded have largely taken over, control of every single elected Republican in the United States, or the vast majority of them. So, it's not just the failures of the Democrats. It is the successes of the autocrats, or of the plutocrats, rather, the billionaires, in not only seizing the Republican Party, but seizing much of the media that informs America. Excellent point, Vinish. Thank you for the call. Jeanette in Richland Center, Wisconsin. Hey, Jeanette, what's up?
I've got a couple things to talk about. One of them is the Boy Scouts in West Virginia. I have a grandson who comes out of Kansas. My daughter is a education person in Kansas, so I know all about Brownback and what he's done there. Well, this very knowledgeable grandson of mine, who's an Eagle Scout, he has written papers on the plight of Syria. He went to this rally in West Virginia and listened to this Trump speech, which was probably the most offensive thing that...
You're talking about the Boy Scout Jamboree?
Yes.
Okay.
And I heard on Stephanie Miller, another woman, call in and said her son came from California to that. And here, Obama was booed, Clinton was booed, and Trump was rallying up that bunch with all the negatives that he can do.
Right.
And I'm very angry over that. I'd also like to tell you about Tillerson. Tillerson.
Well, hang on just a second, Jeanette. Let's just talk about that for a second first. I would say that it shouldn't surprise us that the Boy Scouts are leaning right wing. It's a paramilitary organization. It wears uniforms. It salutes. It's got ranks. Those are the kinds of institutions that if somebody's not drawn to authoritarianism and thus joins, if they join, no matter who they are, they learn lessons about authoritarianism. So
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you, but the place they put my grandson is not up to me to decide, but it still should not have had a speech like that.
Oh, I totally agree. I totally agree. I'm just not surprised. I'm not astonished by it, frankly. So we've got a minute left. What you wanted to make another point about boycotts, was it?
Yes. Tillerson should never have been on Trump's elbow at that meeting for Putin. The Exxon organization has a $300 billion contract held in sanctions.
Yep.
And Tillerson, even though he's out of there, he'll always be an oil man. And what Exxon has done in Chad or in Nigeria, the poor people of the nations where the oil industry goes in have even less of a life because the dictators are propped up and they gain no money from it.
Yeah, totally agree. Tillerson should have recused himself.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, just like Sessions had to recuse himself just because he had a meeting. Tillerson has had a 40-year relationship and one that has been incredibly profitable and made millions of dollars for him and billions of dollars for his company. And he absolutely should recuse himself with regard to anything having to do with, frankly, not just Russia, but the oil industry as a whole, for at least for the first year or so. And it would be interesting to know how many stock options Tillerson is still holding on to in ExxonMobil and how that might be influencing his decisions. And maybe he sold them all. I mean, it's entirely possible that Tillerson... He's a Boy Scout. He's an Eagle Scout. Maybe he is an ethical guy. Maybe not. But, the appearance of impropriety is what a person has to avoid, as well as actual impropriety. Jeanette, thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.